Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast presented by TaylorMade. I'm Rex. He's Lav. And Lav, we had some golf. It wasn't great golf, but it was golf. The TaylorMade Driving Relief match was held on Sunday at Seminole Golf Club in South Florida. A lot of things to touch on here, but just off the top, give me your thoughts on yesterday's match.
Well, it was just great to actually have something to watch at 2 o'clock on a Sunday. I feel like we'd forgotten what that was like during our couch potato era here. It was nice to have live sports to watch. It was nice to see the world number one swing a golf club again with shots that may not be for PGA Tour titles, but they certainly were doing their part to raise the much needed funds for a very worthy cause with COVID-19 relief efforts. And Rex, I mean, that was the big takeaway from this, right? I mean, the fact that these four players raised more than $5 million for these relief efforts, which was just a great cause. The golf was uneven at times, but that wasn't the bigger point of this match. It was to raise funds, and they certainly did that.
Yes, getting on the couch. Did you go through your whole routine, popcorn, sake, whatever it is you do to get ready for Sunday afternoon golf?
It certainly isn't sake. On this occasion,
whatever, I'm not going to judge you.
It was Corona. Yes, I was putting back a few Coronas, tweeting and watching golf. That's what my Sunday consisted of. How about you? What was your setup?
I think I'm kind of like you in this aspect. Like, we don't really get to watch golf at home because we're at most golf tournaments. So when I am home, normally I will just I'll put it on the recorder and then circle back around and check the highlights later on that evening. But I wanted to see this from start to finish, the old fashioned way, the way we did it before we had fast forward and rewind. And I was captivated. I'm not going to lie. And look, there's actually, in true journalistic spirit, I jotted down 5 bullet points of things that I learned from this match. And right off the top was, whenever we come back June 11th, a Colonial we're all hoping for, there is going to be some serious rust, because it seems like everybody in the world has spent the last 2+ months working on their game. For me, it's putting in my office. For you, it might be in the backyard hitting into a net. Whatever the case may be, I don't think these guys spent the last 2+ months working on their game. I think they were more than happy to sit on the couch and become couch potatoes, really for the first time in their lives, justifiably so. I'm totally fine with that. But I think it's interesting to me, the gap between them and us, at least looking at what I saw on Sunday, it's narrowed a little bit. I mean, it's still huge, but like, there was a lot of rust coming out of those gates.
I mean, you've missed plenty of greens from 80 to 125 yards, which is what those guys were doing yesterday. But Rex, keep in mind, Rory and DJ both said, Rory said he took 7 weeks off after the Players' Championship, did not pick up a club and hit a golf shot for 7 weeks. DJ said he only hit balls for the first time the Sunday prior to the match. So it was understandably there was going to be some rust. And you throw in some really tight lies and a little bit of crosswinds, which is what we saw Sunday at Seminole. And yeah, you're going to have some shots that weren't necessarily PGA Tour caliber. I have no doubt that now, once these courses are reopened and they're able to practice freely, that the caliber of golf at Colonial is going to be much higher than what we saw in the match. But there was still plenty of glimmers of good golf. I mean, Ricky Fowler made 7 birdies on his own. He showed, of that 4 ball, he is the best putter, and that kind of came through in the skills game as well.
Well, and I glossed over this last week when we were kind of doing the preview of what to expect on Sunday. I mean, Ricky has won that Seminole Member Pro twice, so he knows those greens, and that came through. You could absolutely see it. And it was funny because we all leaned into the idea this was going to be a bombing contest. And with those players, Ricky being relatively the shortest of the group, and he proved that, no, it's all about the short game. It's all about the putter. That was the second item on my checklist of things that we learned. And look, the traditionalists are going to take this opportunity to point out that a driving distance are out of control. We need to dial the ball back. We need to dial back the clubs. We need to make gyms illegal going forward, even after the pandemic opens them up, because that's what's ruining the game. Golf courses, classic golf courses, can't withstand the test of time. Hubbub. Bullocks is what I say to that, because I think when you look at what happened on Sunday on a golf course, a well-designed golf course with just a little bit of wind, tight lies, perfect conditions for those kind of guys, you saw some bad golf. I mean, let's call it for what it is. If you look at the first couple holes, 3 birdies through the first 6 holes. That's 24 chances from 4 of the world's best players, and they managed just 3 birdies. Good golf course design, it can beat those distance gains that traditionalists seem to be so worried about.
Yeah, and I think when you look at those first couple holes, certainly you could point to some nerves for someone like Matthew Wolf, who was playing on the biggest stage that he's ever played in his career. I think you certainly saw some rust, particularly from Dustin Johnson. He didn't play particularly well throughout the entire match. But Rex, look, the conversation leading up to this match with so much focus on Seminoles that, boy, this is really going to be an indictment of the current game, where it's just you can just bomb it everywhere and you're going to absolutely overpower the 7,200-yard golf course from the tips. And look, that just didn't transpire on Sunday. I think, and there's a couple reasons for that. First of all, is that those Donald Ross greens are so tricky. They're so small. They're so sloping that it's really difficult to get the ball close to the hole, even with the softer conditions. You had 3 or 4 inches of rain in the days leading up to this match at Seminole. And yes, it probably was softer than what the players wanted and what PGA Tour officials wanted, and certainly what the golf course geeks wanted in order to show off all that Seminole has to offer. And the fact that you had a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind as opposed to 20 to 25, maybe Seminole didn't quite play to its full potential, but it was still plenty tough. It was still plenty tough for these players. Instead of overpowering this golf course and shooting a bunch of 60s and 62s, Ricky making 7 birdies, couple that with a couple really bad swings, you're looking at guys who were maybe shooting a couple under par at best. I thought Seminole really held up well, even with what was just a mild breeze and even with what was some wetter conditions than they probably wanted.
I've played that course, humble brag, and I've never seen it that benign. I've always seen it just howling, where you have palm fronds blowing across the property like tumbleweed, and you're having to brace yourself against the wind walking against it on some hole. So they actually got away lucky, and you're right. It was softer than what I remember. John Rahm.
And how about and look at that closest to the pin contest to win. It was 120 yards, and what, did two guys hit the green? And none of them were inside 15 feet?
Ricky might have hit a shank.
Yeah, that was a little high and thin.
Yeah,
which was really ugly. But I mean, these are the 4 of the best players in the world. 17 looks absolutely spectacular. I would have loved to play that. But I mean, from 120 yards, you can't get it inside 15 feet. That just shows a some rust. These guys aren't used to hitting little chippy 9 irons. They haven't been practicing that over the past 9 weeks. And second of all, great course design and a course that certainly stood the test of time and held up well to these great players.
I think you had a good call in our text exchange last night. And the last hole was a lot like Ocean Forest on 18. And as you and I can both attest, we're usually dropping on the 18th at Ocean Forest.
Yeah, is this spot good? Can I just be 150 in?
That's good. Yeah, pick it up. Let's go from there. It's been a long day. The wind's howling. To that point, though, and I go back to, we don't have to lengthen golf courses. We need to build better golf courses. But I'll get off my high horse on this one as well. If you want to confuse players, modern professional players, don't let them have caddies. And look, I love the caddy ranks. I don't want to get rid of caddies. Please don't take this the wrong way. I think that one of the best parts about covering the PGA Tour, but there was some serious confusion between players about yardages, about being committed to clubs, certainly about reading greens and about what shots to hit. There was some ugly putts and some ugly chip shots. And I think that's really where we see a tour caddy step in and be like, no pards, let's do this one. It's a little bit easier. You got some rust. And it was fascinating to me.
Yeah, there was a lot of misreads on the greens. That was a really good point. It always seemed like players weren't pin high either. They were a half club long or a half club short. You saw a couple misses in some terrible spots over the greens, which is an absolute dead miss for a pro. I mean, that is exactly where a caddy comes into play, right? The famous line is, a player's responsible for left and right, and the caddy's responsible for long and short. And you had a lot of players in back bunkers and spots that were absolutely dead. Very rarely were you pin high. Although I did enjoy Dustin Johnson forgetting one time that he actually did not have a caddy. He smashed a drive. I think it was on 18, and he went to go step off the tee box just to go chase after his ball. He goes, can you just wait a second? I forgot my bag back there. But for a player like Dustin Johnson, who probably hasn't been crunching his own numbers for 10 to 15 years, that was certainly an eye-opening experience. But Rex, I loved it. I loved the carry bags. I love just the scaled-down version. To me, I would love to see a tournament of these guys without caddies, in shorts, with carry bags. I mean, the real players are going to shine in that guys who necessarily aren't having their hands held by some of the caddies.
I will go a step further, and this was kind of my next point, is about some of the things that we learned and some of the things that we liked. One of those things that, and I know the first four tour events won't have caddies. We're not sure exactly. I mean, won't have fans. We're not sure exactly when fans will come
back. They're going to have caddies.
They will have caddies, thankfully. But there'll be no fans, and you'll be able to hear a lot more of the interaction. I think we got a taste of that on Sunday, and the interaction, not just between each player, but we'll also hear between those fans and like, some of the things personality-wise that we saw really came out. Like Matthew Wolf, who you have known because you've covered him at Oklahoma State. He's a funny kid.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a, he's got a weird kind of quirky personality. I think maybe he might have rubbed Rory a little bit the wrong way early in the round, so there was some shade. Now, granted, not great shade, but when you start bragging about millions won at FedEx Cup.
Some FedEx Cup shade is really no shade at all.
That's not exactly Pippen siling up to the mailman and telling him that the mailman doesn't deliver on Sunday. No, for creativity, it doesn't really come in. But for golf, it's actually something I think we can sink our teeth into because it's fun. And you also hear them talking through shots. One of the best moment to me is on what was the 19th hole, that final hole. And you can tell Matt Wolf did not want to hit that shot. He did not feel comfortable with that shot. And Ricky gave him the, you just got to hit a shot, man. Like, it was so calm and so matter of fact.
Step up, man. Come on, step up.
Just hit a shot, man. You got to do this. And I think we're going to see that more, at least in the short term. We're going to hear more players from a viewer standpoint. And I did miss the fans. I did want to hear some piped in claps and some piped in getting the holes because I do miss that. But the opposite of this is I think we're going to be entertained a little bit more.
I mean, on the PGA Tour, the players aren't going to be mic'd up, though. You're still going to have a mic guy who's going to be – it's going to have to stay 6 feet away from the players. I hope you're right. When you don't have that kind of buzz in the background or claps or roars or wherever it is emanating from certain parts of the golf course, you are going to have some idle conversation that gets picked up. I think it, you know, potentially would be a little bit more interesting than what we saw. The banter was a little bit dull. One of the most memorable interactions to me was Matt Wolf after an errant drive and into the sandy area. He poked fun at Dustin Johnson, dating back to the 2010 PGA when DJ grounded his club in the bunker on 18. He asked DJ, "Hey, is this a waste area?" I think that went right over DJ's head too. Like, you think DJ's actually going to remember something from a decade ago? He doesn't probably remember what he had for breakfast.
No, I was told when they went back there for the next morning, major, the next PGA, during a practice round, someone jokingly asked him about, "Hey, TJ, can you ground your club in there?" And they pointed to one of those wild areas, and he was like, I don't know. Like, I just, it really just rolls off his back.
Right over.
Yep, no idea. So, yeah, you're right. It might have been a little too subtle for DJ on that one. The other side of this is there were some seriously awkward moments, no more so than the Air 5 at the very end. I mean, it just, having social distancing is going to take a little while for guys to get used to.
Yes, and I think as a larger point to not having spectators and not having interaction between the players, to me, this four-ball match was an absolute death knell for a Ryder Cup without spectators. There is way that you could have watched that match and thought, okay, I think we can go ahead with a Ryder Cup without fans. There was absolutely no atmosphere. There's no buzz. And to me, it just seems like there was a larger cause here with the players, you know, trying to earn funds and raise funds for these charity relief efforts. But when you don't have that tangible, just the sound, the energy, the atmosphere, when you don't have that in a Ryder Cup match, so much is lost that the players are eventually going to be wondering, what are we even doing this for? Are we just doing this for a television spectacle? Because that's what a Ryder Cup without fans would be. It would just be for
the
television.
Answer is yes. This is a television-only event, and it's going to be that way, like I said, into the foreseeable future. I'm with you. I hope we don't play that. I don't think we should play the Ryder Cup without fans.
There is no way you could watch that match and say, you know what, absolutely, we can do this. We can do this in 5 months for a Ryder Cup. There is no way that it would be successful. And to me, I think the players would absolutely hate it.
No, very good point. My counter to that is, though, what about the Masters?
To me, something is diminished without the Masters as well.
But can you play the Masters without fans in your mind? Like, I think we can, simply because it's Augusta. And I think there'll be something to be said for seeing these guys walk on this venerable piece of property that we all know from memory so well without the fans. I think there would be an element of coolness to that.
Yes, and I think a 72-hole competition is different than a team competition where you're partnering with a player and you've got the emotion and you've got the camaraderie and you've, and you're trying to win for your partner and win for your country. I think that is totally different than a 72 hole competition. I think you can do it easily. I've been saying this for months. I think the 72 hole competition is perfectly fine. It's not great to not have without spectators, but I think you could have a major championship without spectators and not have a huge issue. It would just be, it's just kind of a weird one-off. This 2020 season is going to just be the year of the asterisk, the year that it was just so strange to be able to play tournament golf. And then we'll go back to how it usually is once there's a vaccine and once we have various remedies for this. I think we just move forward, and 2020 is just going to kind of be a weird year. But a 72-hole individual competition is totally different than a team event that is predicated on that fan energy and playing for something greater than yourself. I really believe that a Masters without fans wouldn't be ideal, but I think you could do it and I think it would be okay. Yes, there would be something diminished, but not as much as a Ryder Cup without spectators. To me, that's just a non-starter.
I think Ricky touched on it. And look, he was joking, but I think we can pipe in some sounds. We can pipe in some cheers. After that match last night, I went back and I was watching an old playoff baseball game where you had, it was Cleveland and Chicago the year Chicago broke the curse and won for the first time in a century. And you could hear the crowd, but you didn't necessarily see them. So let's just pipe it in. Let's make it artificial. We do it on sitcoms all the time. Can we not have a soundtrack for golf?
And that's the rumor with the NFL telecast, isn't it? Joe Buck got found himself in a little bit of hot water, saying that they're going to do that. And look, they've got what, 4 months to figure out something now. I think it's pretty clear that if they do have the Ryder Cup, there's not going to be spectators. I think that's pretty obvious at this point. You're not going to have tens of thousands of fans all packed together over a four hole span. So they've got 4 months to get creative. If you pipe it in on TV, is that different than piping it in on the golf course? So to me, as a viewer experience, I don't care as much about that. It's to me, are the players going to be as into it if you don't have people cheering for you and propelling you to the finish line?
No, I can certainly see that. And look, this goes to the bigger picture that I was going to make. That, and I agree with you. That's a very good point about this is probably an indication that we shouldn't play the Ryder Cup without fans. The opposite of that is, and look, even though there were some awkward moments, I think this was a good litmus test for the folks at Colonial to look and see exactly how this all went down and to kind of prove the point that, look, okay, we can do this on a smaller scale. We just need to work this back up. The studs, the walls are already up. We need to figure out how to get the roof on and get the rest of the players, rest of the caddies, rest of the officials, everybody from the traveling circus to get inside this bubble and move forward. It was a good, encouraging start.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm more optimistic than ever that the PGA Tour is going to resume June 11th, and it'll be okay. The 72-hole competition, there is plenty of ways to socially distance. As long as the players have, Lysol wipes in their caddy bibs and they wipe down all the rakes and they wipe down flag sticks after each use, I honestly do not foresee an issue with the 72-hole competition. It's what happens when you get outside the bubble of the competition, when you get outside the bubble of the clubhouse and kind of that tournament atmosphere. Are players and caddies going to stay resigned to that designated hotel, or are they going to venture out? Are they going to go mingle in groups? Are you going to go travel on something that's not those charter planes? That's a way that this model is going to get broken. It's not the 72-hole competition. It's what happens to everything outside of that, where you're potentially going to have some dangers here. And that is when you're going to start to see some of the positive tests, if we have them.
Yeah, and I will say this, that my wife watched this, and my wife never watches golf, you're well aware of that. But the one thing, and she's the one that pointed this out, the only time throughout the entire broadcast that she felt like anyone had sort of violated whatever rules we have when it comes to social distancing right now is Jerry Foltz. She felt like he was too close to Ricky Fowler. And then she stopped herself and said, well, anybody wants to be close to Ricky Fowler. So I don't know how I feel about that comment, but I certainly support the idea.
Yeah, I'm not sure there was actually, 6 feet. I'm not sure there was 6 feet of distance between Lerner and Azinger in the studio. But I guess aren't we just like approximating at this point? And look, if everyone is getting tested, everyone tests negative, you can have some of those occasional breaches, and it'll be okay. But I thought this was a ringing endorsement that you could do a 72-hole competition safely. I'm more optimistic than ever before that this is going to be starting on time.
And look, I don't harken back quite to the days of the old Skins game. So maybe this isn't a very good question for you. Maybe not for me either, but I'm not sure about the Skins format. I think I would have rather seen some sort of just straight up match play scenario, because I caught myself and I kept trying to do the math, but the money and the numbers just got too big and I'm not very good at that. So it was hard for me to put this all together. And I love that it came down to the 18th hole and then the extra hole. I just think you could have come up with a little bit better format moving forward.
That and I think for recreational players, it's an absolutely disastrous format because we're not good enough. But to me, the most interesting format for professional golfers to play in a team setting is alternate shot. Just because of some of the awkward spots you have, some of the weird dynamics. If you leave your partner in a bad position, you really do not want to say sorry. And so
I do it a lot.
Just to have one element of alternate shot, I thought would have been cool. I thought some of the long drive elements were okay. I like the finish with the closest to the pin competition determining the overall champion. But I mean, four balls, it takes a long time. It's a little bit slow, and you can have some of these carryovers. I also would have liked to see kind of a mixed element to this. You could have brought in some tailor-made athletes from the LPGA as well to kind of spruce things up. They certainly would have talked a lot more than Dustin Johnson or Ricky Fowler would have. I mean, those two are great. Their peers absolutely love them, but that's not who you'd want for some of the banter. To me, that was what was lacking in this competition, was some of that needling that wasn't necessarily PGA Tour marketing driven with some FedEx Cup digs.
Well, you want Pat Perez and Bubba Watson.
I want Eddie Pepperell.
Sure. Yeah, that would even work too. You can throw Ian Poulter in there just to make it a Ryder Cup thing. We could have a lot of fun with that.
We really could. I mean, look, this was a great charity match. The mission was accomplished to get more than $5 million. This is a nice appetizer for this week with the Tiger and Phil, and then moving forward with the Colonial Restart. It seems like things are going in the right direction. But if we do this again, Rex,
in the camera. Perfect. Yes. The wag the chubby finger in the camera just to prove your point.
If we do this again, there are ways to improve it. And we look forward to pitching those ideas.
Now, is there anything going forward real quick? And I know this is really early in the process, but is there anything moving forward? I think all four of these players are in the field at Colonial. I know Rory is. I know DJ is. Did you see anything from any of the four that would give you hope that maybe that they would be the ones that could hoist that first trophy back?
No.
Nothing. No. Ricky's putting. No. Wow. All right. Well, that was a very quick answer. I didn't mean for it to be that quick.
I mean, they've got 3 weeks to sharpen their games. I have little doubt that Rory's going to play well. Has he ever played Colonial before?
No, he has not.
Right. So that's a golf course. It takes a little bit of time to get used to. Can't imagine DJ's ever played that. That's not a golf course that would be right up his alley. Although Brooks has played well there. In the past challenge for the title a couple of years ago. So maybe it is evolving into a long hitter's ballpark, although Kevin Na is the defending champion.
Now, you did not touch on the highlight of what was yesterday's telecast. And I know it was the highlight for you when it's when Rich Lerner called you out for your reference, comparing Matthew Wolf to Zion Williamson. Great comparison. Your alliteration, as always, is perfect. I do want to point out, though, it's worth saying that your Zion of golf went 0-for-8 to start the game and missed the game winner at the end. So maybe it was a bit of a stretch for comparison reasons. I'm just saying.
But what is Zion known for? He's known for those highlight reel slam dunks over like three players on the opposite team. And what did Matt Wolf do yesterday? He won the longest drive competition twice.
Yeah. Twice.
He smashed it. What? He had 345 and then 360 for the winning drive. I mean, that is Matt Wolf's game. It's not going to be pretty for 72 holes. He's not going to absolutely obliterate you. But the times that he does shine are going to be absolutely spectacular. And that's what you're going to tell your friends about afterward. Boy, that Matt Wolf with that weird swing, he can absolutely crush the ball. That was on display yesterday. He was not sharp. He did not look particularly good, and that was kind of carrying over from what we'd seen early in 2020, the fact that his game just isn't there right now. But he certainly connected on those two plays, just like Zion connects for a couple highlight reel slam dunks. Matt Wolf is capable of doing the exact same thing on the tee box. The thank you.
I feel like they could
point that out. That was absolutely my favorite moment of the match as well. Also, I would yes. encourage readers to go to golfchannel.com to learn more about Matthew Wolff. I think you can still find it in our archives.
I feel like and it's a very well-written story, but I feel like that does a disservice
to Zion's. You actually read it? You actually read
3-point shooting. Let's say yes.
let's say yes, but in actuality,
no. I might have skimmed it. You never know. All right, before we get out of here, apparently we're doing the Where's Lavner version. Last week it was flowers. It looks like you're back in your office this week. Do you have any other cameos you're going to make around your house before we're done working from home?
I mean, we've got, this is a 4-bedroom house, three bathrooms. I mean, there is ample opportunity for me to find another background location. Fortunately, my wife is not ripping her coworkers a new one downstairs. And so I'm able to be back in my office in the solitude of my home office and able to do this podcast with you, Rex.
It sounds like your wife is really in a contentious job. I'm happy she's in a better place today.
These are tough times, Rex, especially in higher education, which is where she works.
Well, yes, yeah, she's joining the podcast. Even
oh, yeah, she is. Special guest.
All right, that'll do it for this edition. Golf Central Podcast presented by TaylorMade. I'm Rex. He's Lab. We'll see you next week.